So my name is Chris Curry. I am 46 years old. Today's date is Friday, June 25th, 2021. I am in Shreveport, Louisiana. The name of my recording partner is Montgomery, and our relationship is one that has just begun through one small step because he's my one small step conversation partner.
My name is Montgomery Cole. I am 33. I'm from Shreveport, Louisiana, and my conversation partner is Chris, and I just met him on this recording with my one. He's my one small step partner. So. I guess one thing that was interesting to me, Chris, from your bio was you're a Presbyterian minister in Shreveport. Is that right? Okay, cool.
That's right. That's right. I have been here for about 8 years, and before that, lived abroad in Scotland for 3 years, and then before that, served at another Presbyterian church in North Carolina, where I kind of
Okay.
started out in ministry. So I've lived, I guess, throughout the South, except for that brief
In Scotland.
time in the Carolinas, and then went to seminary. Yeah, I went to seminary in New Jersey for 3 years, but other than that, I've
I
pretty
gotcha.
much lived in the South.
Where did you go to? I'm
And
actually
how about
originally
you?
from
Are you?
Memphis, Tennessee, and then I met my wife in New
Okay.
Orleans. We were at a I don't know if you ever heard of Infuge. It's a summer camp that brings a bunch of different youth groups from churches down to a college, and then they go out to the inner city, and they actually mix up all the youth groups that come that week, and then they go out into the inner city and then help or the community, not just the inner city, but the community, and serve the community. But that's where I met my wife. And then she's from Shreveport, so that's how I ended up there. And I've been there since 2013, so about the same time. Yeah,
Okay. Well, we came
2013.
about the same time. That's right.
Where do you do you have your MDiv? Did you where do you where did you get your
The Master of Divinity degree at
Okay.
Princeton Theological Seminary, and then did a PhD
Oh,
in
okay.
theology in
That's
Scotland,
cool.
so University of Edinburgh,
Yeah.
and that's where we're there. One thing that I, in reading your biography, that was interesting to me is I actually thought it was mine, because and then I was thinking, well, I thought we were supposed to be
That's what
polar
I thought
opposites that
too.
are paired up, but I grew up in Texas. So I grew up in kind of a conservative small town
Yep.
political culture, and then have lived in various places. But when I came to Shreveport, and since I've been here, I have felt like I'm m maybe more liberal than the
Yes.
norm here in terms of politics and political discussions, especially in the last. In the last 6 to 8 years. And part of why I wanted to participate in this is because I feel like our ability to have conversations across political disagreements is almost
Absolutely, I feel the
non-existent.
same
And
way.
so I was like, well, I kind of feel like it's my patriotic duty to participate in a StoryCorps just to try to do something that to break that cycle.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like I think so. I grew up in a church in Memphis. The pastor was ordained in the PCA. But then once he got ordained, he ended up starting his own church that was non-denominational. And my mom ended up working there as the children's director. And I mean, I was in that world. And so that's when I saw Presbyterian. I was like, oh, we can not that Leah may want to hear this, but we we can talk about the 5 points of Calvinism and stuff. But anyway, but yeah, but as I've gotten older and grew up in the ministry, I saw a lot of more, I guess, things that I didn't really see how they linked to my understanding of what Jesus was teaching. Does that make sense? And so that's when my like deconstruction of my faith probably started. So, and then being here, I feel a little bit more liberal than everybody. I feel like if I, you know, communicated my beliefs to a lot of people in the community of Shreveport, they would think that I was what's that term that they, you know, like extreme socialist liberal or whatever. And so it's just, it's interesting to me, and I don't know that I feel that extreme, but I don't feel like I can even talk to anybody without being called a socialist or something like that. So it's been a turning point. It's just, that's the reason I wanted to do this, was because I agree. Like if we can't learn how to communicate about things in a civil manner without stimulating just like propaganda while we're, trying to just win the next election, like I don't see how we're going to continue. I mean, that's been my biggest issue with the past 4 to 6 years. So,
Yeah. And we both come from religious backgrounds. And one thing I think that is true in this national debate is how much meaning people assign to political identity and political disagreements, almost in a religious, I would say they assign religious meaning to a lot of this. Absolutely. Even though it's like you've described it as civic or political disagreement, but to call somebody whatever, socialist or some other
bleeding heart liberal is the one that
is negative.
Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, any of those terms, I think, are used as kind of epithets to
absolutely
dismiss people. So, and a lot of it is because I think I do think this is true on both the right and the left. And maybe this is also true because we look at religion as more of a private thing, but too much religious meaning is assigned to political commitments, I think. And so therefore, if you're not part of my political tribe, you're the enemy, you're somebody that I have to destroy, defeat, not have anything to do with. I do think that mentality reigns kind of as a working mentality for a lot of people.
Why do you think, as Christians, why do you think, or the culture, we do that? We assign that weight, that association, that religious association with the political parties.
Well, I mean, part of it, I think, is natural in that. You want to have some kind of tangible outcomes mm-hmm. for your religious beliefs, and put them into practice in a public way. But, I do think it's at a weird, another example of it right now is like the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops kind of taking on the Vatican and the Pope over whether or not they can, it's a political thing, whether or not they can give communion to President Biden.
Okay.
because of his stance on abortion. So, like, that, I mean, everything is across the board. You know, whether or not you wear a mask is a political statement. It's not a health statement. It's not a trying to not spread the coronavirus. It's what side you're on politically. Every it seems like, it seems like everything that we do publicly somehow is interpreted as a political motive or political decision. And I just don't think it should have that much weight in our society and how we live, but it does.
I think that has a lot to do with just our humanity, in that I think we probably both believe that we have a desire to feel loved or special, and which receives love in some way. And so to feel that way towards ourselves or feel that from others, we have to assign that. Well, I'm not wearing a mask because I'm this, or I am wearing a mask because I'm this. So and the irony is that they're both thinking the same thing potentially, is like, we're better than the other, but they're, one's not doing something and one is doing something. Anyway, it has been a struggle for me, especially, you know, in the mainstream, just listening to, Christian leaders, and, you know, I've read a little bit about the Biden, a communion thing, but I just think it's so silly. I don't know. I think it's silly just because he has a belief that may not align with his, he has a civic belief that doesn't technically align with his religious belief, that they won't give him communion. I think that's, or they want to not hold that back. I think that's super silly. Like,
right. Right. Well, it's one particular one. It, you know, it's not his thoughts on capital punishment or other religious beliefs that impinge. It's just one particular one, and that's I think that's the issue. Because when you open that Pandora's box, then you can punish or withhold communion or whatever you want to call it from anybody that may not, or everybody, all of us are
absolutely
ineligible in some way if we don't, if our beliefs don't align.
Like, that's a great example of why I don't necessarily associate with a church anymore, is because my understanding of Jesus is that he is here for everybody, you know, and I guess the people that I've been around in the Christian community in Shreveport tend to forget that from the, you know, biblically in the Gospels, he hung out with the lowly, you know, and the people who were considered outcasts and lepers, and we're worried about the president's one specific view on, for say, abortion. What about all these other things that he believes? You know. Anyway.
Well, it seems that maybe some of the other practices of a prior president or presidents were not as did not require the bishops to make a stance, even though they could have.
To me, that's hypocritical, I guess. The thing is, like, I don't know. It's very interesting to think about, to think about that hypocrisy that's there. not and then like to not expect that, but or hope that it's not there, but know that it is because of, you know, our humanity, is really kind of sad.
Right.
But it is what it is, and that's where I struggle with it. I think we take ourselves a little too seriously.
I serve a church that's made up of people from across the political spectrum, and I would say we're pretty evenly represented across the political spectrum, which has led to, at times, it's wonderful in the sense that we're diverse, a diverse community of political views, but it can also lead to challenges because I'm a public figure, so to speak, in some ways. So that means that I think part of my job is to celebrate the fact that we're a community that is not just monolithic politically, and to try to represent that to our, I mean, part of my challenge, but also part of my, the good part of my job opportunity is that try to form a community that transcends some of these divisions and try to represent that and be a public example of that. It can also be challenging, especially in the past, you know, like I said, the past year or years, but I feel like that is what we need. We need more communities that have people from a variety of political backgrounds and viewpoints that are trying to live together and get along. And that kind of feels like what we've been losing in the most recent years.
Yeah, I think, I don't know why that's changed so much. Have you heard of a book called Jesus and John Wayne? Have you seen that book?
I've heard of it. Yes, I've heard of it. I haven't read it.
She basically like maps out this path of how modern day, you know, Protestant Christianity has tracked more political since like the days of I lost his name, Billy Graham, until like Mark Driscoll, and then
right,
know, and how that's led into the previous president, people, you know, Christian leaders supporting the previous president, even though, you know, he was obviously not the most moral human being. Not that he has to be, I guess, but in hopes that he would be a representation of, you know, the 320 million people he represents. So, but anyway, it was right. A really good book, and it actually, I thought it was going to be more depressing when I finished it, but it kind of gave me a little bit of hope, you know, that a new wave of belief will come about. But anyway, so
I think we've kind of danced around this, but, and I don't want to be completely dismissive either, but the elephant in the room to me is what happened in the last 4 years of Trump. And to take the most positive spin is his approach to politics was so, what shall we say, asymmetrical or abnormal in terms of conventional but it was also non-conventional. Like, in general, like if you look at the 25 things, maybe if you listed the 25 most offensive things that Donald Trump said in his 4 years, I mean, you could maybe make a bigger list, but let's just narrow it down to that. If you put those words in the mouth of any other political figure, they would, their career. It would have it would have destroyed them. They would have had to have a press conference and apologize. And for whatever reason, he had the ability to be unconventional in his approach and was able to say and do things that the rest of us would pay dearly for, and was almost Teflon in that way. And I think that did damage, and we're still working through the wreckage of some of that as a country, as people, whatever our politics are, whether we want to admit that. I think that we're still dealing with the aftermath of that.
After January 6th,
plus that event too,
which I mean, I would qualify it as, I think some of these senators and politicians who were trying to like, oh, it wasn't an insurrection, I think that's really terrible thing to do, to belittle a major event in our country. But I also don't want to like over embellish it to like this other extreme. But after that, and then I think one of the reasons he had this ability to do stuff that was just outrageous, and then like you said, it was just like Teflon. It was like the 48-hour news cycle, and then of this one thing, and then it moved on to the next. One, I think that he knew what he was doing with that, and his group that marketed him knew what they were doing when they were doing that. But I also think that the media and social media had a major part to play in all of that. Because a lot of it.
Yeah. I mean,
all he was thinking about was, if I'm in the news tonight, regardless of good or bad, that's good. And, I'll be honest, since President Biden has been in the White House, like, there's a few times where I've seen, like, you know, I'll see news stories where it's like, oh, you know, the new, my brain is shot. The new stimulus package, or the Voting Rights Act, or the, you know, infrastructure plan, like, and they're just about that. And it's like, and then you have like the silly, you know, late night stories about like his dogs and stuff, but it's nothing like super controversial. But I think that's what happened. I mean, you obviously have a fairly non-controversial person in that office, but
trying to wean us from having
this
in front of us all the time
of politics for 4.5 years. And that's what I think Biden is intentionally trying to do that. And I'm appreciative of it, because I think that's going to help us, you know, heal faster as a country. But I remember about 2 years into Trump's presidency, I was thinking, if Twitter just banned him, we would see a change in the culture. And as soon as they did after January 6th, it was like a weight had been lifted off of the country. And because he didn't have an outlet that everybody was waiting for. Whether it was a tweet that was going to be deleted, they would, you know, screenshot it and save it just so that they could do a bit about it that night on, you know, Seth Meyers or whatever. And it's just kind of, it's like, what, you know, and then even when they do come up with like a story about whatever the former president's doing, that's normally always ridiculous. It's just like, they still want to like go back to it because they've been doing it for 4.5 years. It's like a drug that they've, I don't know. And it's, I'm just like, let's just ignore it and move on. And let's just focus on what we can do to help get past this, you know, virus situation and the economic stuff that's going on with us. And it's really kind of frustrating, especially when you have kids and you're thinking about, well, where are they going to be in 20 years? You know, like where is this country going to be in 20 years? So yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Do you think that, I mean, one thing that I think is still a challenge is there are people that think everything that has just been said in the last 10 minutes is offensive to anyone who was supportive of the Trump presidency and all that. And that we are going backwards as a country right now. Is it possible to either engage or have meaningful conversation with people with that viewpoint from that perspective?
Okay, to clarify, you're asking me if I think that there is a way to have a meaningful conversation in a hopes to change a perspective or viewpoint of like a Trump supporter?
I don't know if it's even change of perspective, but like, I mean, I would guess that a Trump supporter is thinking, a hardcore person, that we are no longer making America great. We are, in fact, mm-hmm. reversing course right now. And that the only way to restore the country, whatever that means, is to kind of go back into the Trump agenda. Is there not a way to change minds, but is there a way to engage and to try to have meaningful conversation beyond just saying we can't talk about this because we disagree so much on this?
I think that there is a way. And I think, but I also think with those types of people, I think for me, my goal has been, if that situation comes up, how do I approach that? And what I've been processing, you know, over the past year and a half, 2 years, is like, what's my goal? You know, what is my goal in this for this conversation? Is it to change their opinion? Is it just to make them think? Is it to give them perspective? Do they want to hear my perspective? And a lot of the times I can't even get past those questions to get to a place to engage with those people, because they are so, it's either me in a bad motive of wanting to change their opinion, or I don't think that they will listen to what I have to say, even if I make an excellent argument.
Right.
Because I have a lot of people who, you know, who are very conservative around me, obviously in Shreveport, but I think, you know, I could make an argument for a national healthcare system and back it up with the gospel and then be like, well, that's just not right.
Yeah.
Because it's, I mean, to me as a Christian, if we're here to love one another and help one another, doesn't that make sense to you know pile resources and and get money to help people who can't, who are making, you know, $15,000 a year that can't afford health care or can't work or find a job. I think there's a lot more issues than just, honestly, like, it comes down to, I think the things that have become hot topic and push, but you know, just hot button topics for the Christian community are things that they don't like, and they're not necessarily the root of the problem. Like, I don't think abortion is as big of a problem as it's made out to be within the community, within the nation. I mean, abortion rates have gone down since the 80s every year.
Yeah.
And so, and I think a lot of that has to do with access to, you know, access to healthcare and access to contraceptives and other things like that. And education is a major issue. I think we're like number 15 or 22, somewhere in that range, you know, in education in the world.
Yeah.
And then we're expecting, you know, a family of five, or a family of four or more that makes $30,000 a year to be able to pay for their kids to go to college and get a, or a trade school to be able to support their family. No, like, you, it doesn't make any logical sense to me. And that's why I'm like, that's where I want to go with the conversation I think a fellow believer in Jesus, but I don't think that they see it that way. I think they see it as America before. I think they may say that Jesus comes before their patriotism, but I don't know that their actions show that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think also, like, you know,
and I think Trump has made that worse.
Right. We post World War II, there was and during World War II, there's God and country, and kind of everybody was behind defeating the Axis powers. Hitler, you know, was like your textbook evil figure, as well as, you know, in Japanese imperialism, I guess. But starting point, then like God, then no matter what the issue is, somehow God and country are just automatically aligned, you know, whether it be Vietnam or whether it be not even a geopolitical issue, but, you know, a Supreme Court justice or something. Like, and I just don't think that, like, God is bigger than just America, and that the mission of a Christian community, even in this country, has different priorities than whatever our national and domestic priorities are. And the job of Christians or the church is not to, you know, unapologetically support everything the country does. Or you think that our mission is to make America Christian or make America whatever. I think the Christian community has its own mission, and it sometimes aligns with the country and the politics of the country, and sometimes it has to kind of go a separate path and even protest. And I don't think that is always well received in the Christian community by people that are certain political persuasion, but maybe all political persuasions. I mean, but I think that part of the job of a church is to be both countercultural as well as part of the cultural context wherever it is, and you can't just be you can't just be a yes person, a yes community to the powers that be. Sometimes you have to say that's we're not aligned with that. And if you cast your lot with one political party too much, whether it be a Republican or Democrat, you're in danger, I think, of selling out a little bit to an agenda that you can't really, that controls you, that you don't really have total, you know, that you don't have some autonomy from. So anyway, I think that's the challenge, is it's easy to become co-opted by a political agenda, whatever your political background is. And I think part of the job of a Christian community or a church or an individual is not to allow that to happen, but to try to transcend some of those polarities.
Chris, I think as a pastor, I guess my question is, do you think that there are some people who see the inconsistencies of whether it's, you know, a Republican or Democrat, you know, there the inconsistencies of both of those political parties' beliefs that don't align with their faith or, you know, the Gospels or the Bible in general over the past 4 years?
Yeah, I think the people that are most politically active that I know in my congregation are pretty certain, I think, that they are on the side of what God intends, whatever their politics are, whether they're a staunch supporter of Biden or a staunch supporter of Trump. Those that are most politically active in my congregation think that they are doing the work of God, and maybe they are, but I would say maybe a majority though of my congregation probably is how you described, who don't see complete alignment between their faith and either political party yet either hold their nose and go one direction or the other. Or, I mean, I don't think any of them are apolitical. Very few are apolitical. I mean, they may be cynical about the process, but for the most part, they're gonna choose one way or the other. So a majority of the people are not like so staunch that they think, you know, if you're not voting for Biden, then you're not on the side of God, or if you're not voting for Trump, then you're not on the side of what God intends. But there are some that I would agree. One thing that I wonder if we want to try to touch on is, I think you mentioned this, like maybe some of your views on healthcare. Is that something you hold now that you feel sets you apart from people around you? Or are there other views that you have that sets you apart from people around you related to your faith?
Yeah. I think I have a lot of beliefs that, like healthcare, I think there's a lot of people around me who don't believe that a national healthcare system would be a good thing. But to me, the irony in that is that there are already people who do not have access to healthcare, and if it either is one, not reported on, or two, not made, you know, it's not something that people know about, or is talked about. But it's kind of like something that Americans hold dear is the right to vote, but we can't even pass a Voting Rights Act that makes it easier to vote in Congress, because, you know, we can't get 10 Republicans to sign it over. So that's one issue that's seen as, oh, well, that's the right side of it. That's what it should happen. Okay, well, that should happen, but you're not going to, and then abortion, but you're not going to try to take care of people. And then not to mention, like you mentioned earlier about the death penalty, and So we're going to talk about abortion, but we're not going to talk about the death penalty. How does that work? How do you, you don't want to kill babies, but you're fetuses, but you don't want, but you're great with, you're fine with killing people who have made a bad choice or done things in their life and forget about rehabilitation. Just throw them in a cell and let's forget about them.
And
or
not,
just
let's, not, you know. And not worry about their health care either.
Who cares about that? You know,
Well, the other thing I would just say is, I don't know that this is different than the people around me, but I think that I see race as more of an issue that needs to be dealt with in a different ways than we've traditionally dealt with in this moment. And I don't know that everybody sees it that way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think race is a, especially in Shreveport, it's a major issue. And I mean, I can't believe I heard the N word the other day, but I did. And because I haven't heard that word since I left Memphis, and someone just flagrantly said it in conversation to me, thinking I was going to agree with them at work while I was at work. And I was like, I was in shock. And then I finally he left, and I was just like, oh my gosh, like people still think this way. Obviously he was an older man, but I'm just like, racism is a major issue in the Shreveport-Bossier area. And there's a lot of politics that go along with that. And a lot of things that have failed the overall community that need to all be fixed in order for, you know, a system to work better. So,
well, I think Lee's telling us we got to wind down, but I thank you for
come on, Lee.
but I will say that, to me, I always joke that our Presbyterian church is like a refuge for Christians who've been malpracticed upon by other denominations. And it sounds like to me that you need to pay us a visit sometime.
All right. Well, I'll look you up. I appreciate you talking. Maybe we can have another chat as well somewhere around Shreveport.
That'd be great.
Okay. Well, I don't want to keep you.